So, my husband and I are connoisseurs of t-shirts where you got to be really careful where you wear them. So, my God, did Game Boy find a gem recently. It is actual, like, Hooters branded merchandise, like, found on their website.
Yes.
It is a 10th anniversary 9/11 shirt. So, it's got the two towers forming the 11. It's got a big old 9. It's got Hooters on it. And then, babe, then, the tagline at the bottom of this t-shirt, which I cannot state enough, they sold on their website, like it was their marketing thing, "Let Freedom Wing."
Oh my God.
It just came in the mail today.
I have a shirt that says Monday Night MILF, and I'm not allowed to wear it outside of the house.
See, we have tons of shirts, and I'm very selective. He has them, you know.
That, like, one definitely takes the cake.
It would be funny no matter what, but the fact that somebody on Hooters' marketing team was like, I know how to capitalize on the 10th anniversary of this tragedy. And this was before it had become, like, the most meme. If that came out this year, because it's so memeable.
Yeah. Everyone's like, yeah.
No, this was 2011. Yeah. And they're saying, "Let Freedom Wing," unironically.
Yeah.
And it's just the best thing I know about.
That's rough.
That's beautiful. I can't wait to wear it. I'm going to steal it from his closet as soon as I can.
I mean, it's funny now. So it's okay.
It's not. I just want to know. I mean, the fact that it's still available on their website and it's 15 years old, like, maybe that's it didn't wild. Do as well. They're like, listen, we've got.
They're like, we're just going to keep it in the warehouse until they're gone, I guess.
It's like they knew it was going to, like, they were ahead of their time. And they knew someday
someone on the marketing team was a time traveler.
People who were not born for 9/11 would think it was the fucking funniest thing that ever happened to this country. And they would buy them up like hotcakes.
I think there was, like, something recently about, like, something about, like, Japan, like, and, like, the atomic bombs and, like, Americans not respecting it enough. And so they made a bunch of crazy stuff with 9/11 things, but they failed to understand that Americans think 9/11 is funny. And
so we just loved it.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah.
It's like, and it so isn't, but we just cannot deal with anything that has happened.
It is too traumatic. So we're just going to be funny instead. Well,
too traumatic and too, oh, I don't know, too, like, obviously something the fuck is up with the narrative and the.
Did George Bush do 9/11?
I don't know, babe. I don't know what the fuck happened with it. I just know that something's, I don't know what the fuck. Why did Tower 7 collapse a fucking block away when there's buildings in between? Like, there's some shit. Listeners at home, there's some shit about 9/11. That's all I'm trying to say. And this t-shirt is fucking gold.
All right.
We have a book episode.
Let's stop talking about 9/11 now, please. Today, we are going to talk about The Sunbearer Trials by Aidan Thomas.
Okay.
This book draws from Mexican mythology and culture. Aidan Thomas weaves a beautiful queer normative fantasy world. Fancy world.
It is fancy,
but it's also fantasy. And in which teen semi dioses compete in potentially deadly trials for a chance to be the next Sunbearer. This book is well paced, balancing humor with moments of intensity, and explores themes of self-acceptance and challenging social hierarchies. I'm ready. Are you ready, Pixel?
Nope. Let's go.
All right, let's get lit. So this book actually opens with a short creation narrative.
Hot. I love it. Let's do it. Yeah.
So in the beginning, there is Soul. Okay. Sol, S-O-L.
Sun, yeah.
Sun. Sol creates the Earth, and with it, Tierra. Together, they create three groups of gods. The Golds, who are extremely powerful, but also vain. The Jades, who are kind, but too focused on themselves and their power.
So also vain?
Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
Like, focused as in, like learning more about it. Like, and how to use it.
Okay.
Thing. And the Obsidians, who are passionate but selfish. After try number three, Sol is like, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. Yep. Sick of you people.
All my kids are bullshit.
So he buries his heart in, or sorry, Sol decides to bury their heart in the Earth's soil, and humans are inadvertently created. And Sol and Tierra love the humans. They are their favorite creation. Sol and Tierra task all the gods with taking care of the humans, but the Obsidians are like, we don't want to do that. So they rebel against the rest of the gods. To save their creations, Sol sacrifices themselves and becomes the sun. The sun protects the Earth during the day by keeping all of the Obsidians in the sky. And at night, they are protected by stones that Tierra made out of Sol's body. The Sunbearer Trials are created because every 10 years, the stones require a sacrifice to rejuvenate them. So the winner of the trials becomes the Sunbearer, who goes to each stone to replenish it, and the loser is sacrificed in order to refuel them.
Okay.
Chapter one opens with our main character, Teo, being caught pulling a prank. Teo is a trans semi-dios, or demigod, whose mother, Quetzal, the Jade Diosa of Birds, whose mother is Quetzal, the Jade Diosa of Birds. I've forgotten how to talk, apparently.
This is also not all in English, so forgiveness.
Teo is let off easy and goes to run some errands, and we kind of get a look into his daily life. We meet several members of Teo's community who helped care for him after his father died. He is interrupted by a fire breaking out in the panaderia, I believe is how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than wait for the gold semidioses, whom they call heroes, Teo takes matters into his own hands. But he doesn't do so well and ends up having to be saved anyway by the gold heroes, including his ex-childhood friend and his sister, Aurelio and Aristella. Teo then makes his way to his mother's temple, where Quetzal scolds him for being late. Tonight is the ceremony where they will choose 10 semi-dioses who will compete in the trials. For Teo, this ceremony is just a formality. Jade semi-dioses are never chosen. Okay. He is quickly made ready with the help of his caretaker, Huemac. And we learn that Teo has wings, but since he is trans, he hides them because they look like female wings, and they are duller and brown and not the bright green wings of a male.
Okay.
Bird. So we get to this kind of pre-ceremony party dinner banquet thing. And we start to meet some of the other demigods who are there. We meet Nia, who is one of Teo's only friends. She is extremely excited about the Sunbearer Trials. She is the daughter of Tierra, who is, and she is a gold. So all the golds go to this kind of like elite training academy where they are literally trained to compete in these trials. Mm-hmm. So we also meet Zio, who is the son of the god of bad luck, Mala Suerte. We also learn that Teo and Aurelio used to be good friends until Aurelio went to the academy and then would not talk to Teo anymore.
Okay.
So they eventually gather up all of the semidioses, and they're going to be chosen. The ceremony is led by Luna, the diosa of the moon. When the semi-dioses are chosen, a sunburst crown appears on their heads.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So the first to be chosen is Ocello. They are the child of Guerrero, who is the diose of war. Next is Marino, son of Agua, diosa of water. Next, both Aristella and Aurelio are chosen. They are the twin daughter and son of Lumbre, the diosa of fire. Next is Atzi, daughter of Tormentoso, dios of weather. Then Sochi, daughter of Primavera, diosa of spring. Desi, son of Amor, diosa of love and community. And then, despite Teo's silent pleading that she not be chosen, we have Nia, who is chosen. Next, while Teo is lost in thought about his friend, the next semi-dios is chosen, but it is not a gold. It is Zio, the young son of Malasuerte, a jade god.
Oh.
Everyone in the crowd is shocked, as jades almost never get chosen to be in the trials. Lastly, while everyone is still reeling from one jade semi-dios being chosen, mm-hmm. the final contestant is chosen, and it is, of course, Teo.
Yep.
After some protests from Teo and Malasuerte on the choosing of two jades, all the contestants are taken into Soul Temple, where they have rooms waiting for them. Nia assures Teo that she will help him survive, and they decide to also offer to form an alliance with Zio. To show solidarity, they invite Zio to go raid the kitchen. They all vow to help each other survive over hot chocolate and pan dulce.
Nice.
The next day, Teo has to be fitted for clothes that he is going to wear in the trials. All the golds already have these, like, super high-tech training clothes.
Because they were prepared for this.
But yeah. Teo's a jade. You don't got that. So, he gets fitted for that. They are, his uniforms are made with special slits for his wings, even though he keeps them bound and insists he won't use them.
I feel like you gotta use whatever you got, even if they don't look right.
Yeah, probably. So it is announced that they will be traveling first to Nia's home city of La Cumbre for their first trial. All the competitors travel on a yacht to each city.
Nice.
While traveling, Teo tries to train by, like, lifting weights, but he just ends up hurting himself. And Aurelio is there, and he gets super embarrassed in front of him. Yeah. Anyway. So when they arrive, the trials begins, like, immediately. Like, they get off the boat, and they go to the, what is that called? The arena.
Mm-hmm.
So this trial is a race to the top of a mountain that's filled with obstacles, essentially.
It would not need to be filled with obstacles in order for me to not do well at all.
Yeah.
In that I would sort be of dead. A situation.
Immediately. Throughout it, Teo, like, struggles, but he figures it out. He's gonna be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Until he sees, Ocello, attacking Zio. In a moment of courage, he decides to use his wings to get Zio to save him. He realizes that his wings have changed from the dull female feathers into his bright-colored male feathers.
Hell yeah.
When the trial is over, they all gather to see the rankings of everyone. The first rankings are announced, and thankfully, neither Teo or Zio are in last place. They then get dressed in traditional garb for the city, and they go to dinner at the temple. But a fight breaks out between Teo and some of the golds, and so then everyone is sent to their rooms. Zio, Nia, and Teo decide, we're not just gonna survive these trials, we're gonna kick some butt.
Yes.
So they kind of start talking about the other competitors,
all of the gold heroes have these like trading cards that Zio collects. Oh my god.
That's so
yeah, it's super lame. But so they're using those to learn about the strengths and weaknesses of all the other golds and everything.
Yeah, generally putting that information out is like maybe not the best idea.
I mean, typically the only people who are competing are the current heroes, and they all are going to school and know each other's strengths and weaknesses already. Anyway. So they start, they're like, okay, so we've got that. Let's figure out when the last time a Jade was in the Sunbearer Trials and see, like, how they did. Well, it turns out the last Jade to compete was also a child of Quetzal and was the sacrifice at the end of the trials. Mm. So, poor Quetzal had one child who was sacrificed, and now she has a second child in the game.
That's rough.
It's a bummer. the next day they kind of have like a little outing. They go to the hot springs that are in the mountain. Teo has this jarring moment where he realizes that the golds are essentially treated like royalty because they have like taken everyone else out of the hot springs. No humans, no anything, and it's just for them. Whereas like Teo grew up mingling with humans, goes to school with them, talks to them, all of these things. He also, while they're at the hot springs, has a little interaction with Aurelio. It kind of reveals that maybe both boys still care about each other, kind of thing. So we'll see where that goes.
Is it guy love?
The boat then, they make their way to the next host city, which is El Valle, which is the city of the diosa of animals, Fauna. When they reach the city, they discover that the trial is to bring back a baby alebrije from its nest, protected by its mother within a certain amount of time. Many of the other competitors try to use force in order to get their alebrijes, but Teo, because he's able to communicate with birds, is able to secure a little bird-like baby and also helps Nia and Zio get their alebrijes as well.
So is an alebrije like some sort of like mythical bird creature? Or?
No. Have you seen the movie Coco?
Yeah.
The super colorful animals that are like the spirit guides?
Okay.
That's an alebrije.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. So they all get back to the platform, and the competitors now have to present their alebrijes, but they discover that Zio at some point lost his while trying to escape. Womp womp.
You gotta watch your alebrije.
Yeah. So the new rankings are unveiled, showing that Nia is in first. Yay! Even better, Teo is in fifth, and Zio is still in eighth. So they are still safe.
Okay.
Yes, we're good. Everyone's a little bit confused by the rankings, though, because like it doesn't really make sense that Zio's not in last because he didn't even complete, you know, whatever.
Right.
So Luna explains that the rankings are not solely based on finishing order, but also on performance throughout the trial.
Okay. Whatever.
Yeah, sure. So they have dinner that night, and then Teo goes back to the gym to train. Aurelio is there again, and they kind of smooth things over, and Teo agrees to let Aurelio, like, help him train.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So the next day for their outing, they all go to the Alebrije Sanctuary, and Teo decides he is not going to just stand here and be, like, guarded from the humans. So he goes to the little Alebrije petting zoo and interacts with the humans, and everyone ends up having a great time. So So that's cool. Good job, Teo.
Yeah.
They have dinner then in Fauna's temple that night, where they talk about, like, respect for animals. Like, one of her daughters is vegan and one of her daughters isn't, and they, like, talk about that type of thing. But then conversations kind of turn to, like, Teo's body and his wings and all of this stuff, and it makes him really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So Teo leaves, and Nia comes and comforts him. Eventually, Zio comes and talks to him, too, and they have a really good conversation about gender, gender identity, transitioning. Zio is also trans, but, like, isn't quite as confident as Teo is with himself. And so Teo just encourages Zio, like, to take his time figuring out who he is.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, the boat takes them to the next city, which is the Opal Oasis, which belongs to Diose Guerrero. The trial here is called the Bloodless Battle and requires competitors to team up and avoid being, like, tagged out. Teo is paired up with Aurelio, of course. And by the end of the trial, they are the only team left standing. And you can also kind of see that Teo is like gaining some confidence in his abilities. He's like, okay, I don't suck at everything.
Mm-hmm.
At the rankings, Teo has moved up to fourth. Nia does sink down to second, and Zio remains in eighth.
Okay.
All still safe. Awesome. They learn that the trial was to showcase teamwork, and, you know, that's why Teo was able to move up, even sure. though, you know, he didn't do as well or whatever. So Teo is starting to feel like, hey, maybe I have a chance to win this whole thing. And now he's, like, determined. He's like, I'm going to be the first Jade to do it.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. You do that, dude.
But, like, what is the prize? Spreading one of the other of their blood on a bunch of rocks? Like, oh, yay, I'm glad I won. I get to,
yeah, but it's, like,
I guess it's an honor. You know, yeah. they build it up. But, like, yeah. I'd rather, like, second place?
Right.
I feel good That's about why, second
like,
place.
I would much rather just come right in the middle.
Yep. Yep. I don't want to do the sacrificing. I don't want to be sacrificed.
Exactly.
Yep.
Where was I? So, after the trial at night, Teo decides he wants to get into maybe a little bit of trouble. So he invites Aurelio to sneak off the boat and go buy some candy. They sit and talk, and Aurelio tries candy for the very first time.
No
Never had
way.
Candy before.
Well, that's what you get from hanging around with humans.
Yeah. Losers.
Losers.
So we clearly get to see Teo and Aurelio are beginning to bond, but their outing is cut short when they are caught by Luna, and Teo is punished. He is not allowed to go to the outing next day, but still attends the dinner at the temple. Teo does get a bit of a shock when they get to the temple because Ocello, who has been pretty cruel up until this point, we get to see them in a bit of a, like, a different environment. There's, like, at one point, like, there's this, like, jaguar that comes up and they're like, oh no, the jaguar is going to attack us. But it just, like, cuddles up to Ocello and Ocello's pet.
Okay.
Jaguar and, like, all this stuff. And, like, it's like, oh, you're a person.
All non-binary people actually have an affinity with jaguars specifically. So, like, when I'm at the zoo, the jaguars just, like, roll over and let me rub their belly. And it's, yeah, I don't know why. It hasn't really been studied yet, but it's true. It's true.
The jaguar's there because it's, like, the mascot of his parent, like, Guerrero.
Well, yeah, but all non-binary people have the jaguar mascot. I see. Right on this ass cheek, I got a big tattoo
of
a jaguar.
Oh my god!
I'm sorry. Where were we?
I don't even know anymore. while at dinner, Luna announces the next trial city. It is the city of Laberinto. Which is a jade city. It is not a city of a gold dios.
Like Labyrinth?
Yes. I didn't write down the god that it... But essentially it's like
David
the
Bowie.
God of like
David Bowie
making
is the
choices.
God of Labyrinth.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Essentially. Everyone is confused, but Teo is excited because he is trying to prove that he can be a sun bearer. As they sail into the city, Teo sees many of the spectators are actually cheering for him, and he begins to feel hopeful that he's like, yeah, I can win.
Well, yeah, he's their local boy. You know what I mean? They don't get to cheer for Jades very often.
So the next trial is essentially a scavenger hunt inside of an abandoned temple, and they have to collect all these like different colored rocks that are worth different points. So Nia, Teo, and Zio are like, okay, we're gonna stick together, mm-hmm. and we're gonna collect as many rocks as we can, mm-hmm. and then at the end we're just gonna split them up.
Okay,
so we're gonna work together. That's the plan.
We'll do a communism. Nice.
Yeah. Welcome, Conrad.
Yeah, they all the audience at home all saw you pump your fist in the air like that.
Audio medium. the maze, though, the temple is like, no, and they get separated. So Teo is searching through the maze, trying to find his rocks and try to get to the end. He comes across several, like, of the competitors are just, like, locked in these, like, battles that are, like, super violent even for these people. Like, yes, it's like a fight, like they're all competing to win and like not be sacrificed, but like it's like, okay, this is getting a little too violent.
this contest to not be sacrificed is getting too violent,
I guess. So Teo is able to reach the drop off where they have to drop off their stones, but discovers that the fake soul stone, which is worth 500 points, has not been found yet. So he's like, I'm going to go look for it.
Mm-hmm.
He finds the stone, but he also finds Aurelio and Aristella there trying to reach the stone as well. Teo gets to it first, but it pisses Aristella off. And so she takes it and she breaks it.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it's like, they don't really know why she does that. Like, she's acting crazy. Anyway, Teo runs back to the end, deposits his stone, and realizes he doesn't know where Zio is.
Mm.
They look out and he sees Zio running to the end, but he's not able to make it before time is up.
Oh, Zio.
When the rankings are revealed, Teo is ecstatic because he has moved up to third place.
Okay.
But he notices that Zio has moved to last.
Oh, no.
Instantly, Teo feels guilty for trying to win instead of protecting his friend like he vowed to do.
Oh, that sucks. That sucks. Because, like, why does he need to win?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, like, you don't need to win. Yeah. Like, I get it. Like, I get what you're trying. But, like, also, now your friend's gonna die.
Yeah.
So the last trial, the fifth trial, is approaching. And so the competitors are all travel back to Soul Temple. There is going to be a dinner with the competitors and their parents, like, as like a last hurrah before the final.
Slash goodbye.
Right. Ooh. Anyway, before he can get there, he is cornered by some reporters. The reporters show up at other points, but it's not that important, so I didn't bring them up before. But these two reporters show up, and they want to get an interview. One of the reporters asks Teo how he feels about many of the competitors trending towards extreme violence. So Teo is like, huh, yeah, you're right. That has been weird. So he races to the dinner and is like, hey, somebody's screwing with it. They're screwing with the trials. But everyone's like, no, get out of here. They don't believe him. So he feels super defeated and returns to his room, but his caretaker Quemoc is there and encourages Teo to continue seeking justice, even if it means getting into some trouble.
Very, very, very nice. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Teo that night goes to the observatory in the temple and finds Aurelio already there. They have a pretty deep conversation about how Teo feels about how cutthroat everyone has been. And Aurelio confirms again that that is not normal. Yeah. He said, it's serious, but we all joke around. We're all friends. We are friendly to each other. Like, this feels off.
Mm-hmm.
They also get into some of the dynamics of Aurelio's family. So he reveals that most children of Lumbre are fireproof, but Aurelio is not.
So
he's kind of seen as like a disappointment, a failure. And so Aristella is the only family he really has. So she has been trying to help him win so that maybe their mother will finally accept him.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
Jeez.
Yeah. So that kind of sucks. So the next day, they are put on these little, like, boats to go to a place called Los Restos, which is an abandoned part of their world that used to be inhabited by the Obsidians.
Okay.
The only thing that they have to do for this trial is everyone starts off in a separate path and they just have to walk their path and get to the end. There's not a time limit. They just have to get there without falling off. As the paths move forward, they are going to start to come together and eventually, like, it'll just be one path and you all have to get to the end. That's all you have to do. You gotta walk to the end of this path without falling off. But obviously, the path is fraught with danger and illusions meant to try to get them off the path. Everyone does pretty well through most of it. They are getting to the end. And Aristella is overtaken with unexplainable rage. She attacks Teo and Zio. Nia attempts to save Teo, but Teo ends up sacrificing his ability to finish to save Zio, and so Zio can finish.
Right, okay.
Both Teo and Aristella fall off the path and do not finish the trial. However, when the final rankings are revealed, Teo is still selected as the Sunbearer. And the person in last place, who is going to be the sacrifice, is Aristella.
Huh.
Teo tries to talk to Aurelio after, and Aurelio accuses Teo of letting Aristella fall, even though he knows how much she means to him. The Sunbearer, so now they have to go do this ceremony. As the Sunbearer ceremony approaches, Teo feels kind of on edge. He's talking, he's got to kill somebody.
Yeah.
So, understandable. Quemoc tells him what he has to do to sacrifice Aristella, but Teo is extremely conflicted. When he gets to the altar, he is surrounded by everyone. Aurelio's in the crowd. He can, like, see Aurelio, and Aurelio is, like, upset, obviously. Aristella is dressed in majestic garb and is laid down on the sacrificial stone. But in a moment of clarity, Teo announces that he is not going to go through with the sacrifice, causing chaos amongst the crowd. In the chaos, Teo gives the knife he was supposed to use to Zio, thinking Zio is going to run with it. But Zio does not run with it. Instead, Zio's face begins to morph into something more sinister.
What?
And they all watch as the soul stone goes out and the stars that are the obsidians begin to fall.
What? What? The
obsidians crash to Earth, only to reveal that Zeo is in fact the son of Vengaza and has been working in secret throughout the trials. Diosa Luna tries to get everyone to flee, but she is too weak. It is revealed that Luna cannot survive without Sol, just as the moon has no light without the sun. The obsidians form a rift in the earth, and Luna, along with many of the other semidioses, fall into it. Aristella is able to save Aurelio before she herself falls in. Naya also is able to withstand falling, but she is devastated at not being able to save her friends. Teo is able to find Aurelio, and despite his anger and grief, Aurelio is able to forgive Teo. The dioses begin to argue about what the next step should be. Finally, Tiara says that there may be a way to bring Sol back by finding and putting all the sunstones together. Aurelio, followed by Teo and Nia, offer to search for them and for their friends. The dioses bless them with various gifts for their journey, and the book ends with a to be continued.
Man. Man, what the fuck? And Teo was so nice to Zeo. What the fuck? What the fuck? I don't know. I don't know about that.
I love a book with deadly trials. I love them.
I mean, yeah.
It's a very classic YA trope.
Yep.
But I love them. I can't get enough of them. I want to eat it up. Anyway.
Why would today's world produce so many books about just fucking fighting against each other to survive while people are just raking it in at the top? What about our world would inspire such fiction?
I have no idea.
Not a clue.
Anyway, I just really love, you can tell how much the author loves their culture. Mm-hmm. Every time they bring up the Mexican candy, I really just wanted a Piña Loca sucker, or I think they're called cocadas. They're like coconut things, and they look like the Mexican flag. Cute. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're so delicious. It's basically like the filling of an Almond Joy.
Okay.
But that's it. And I love coconuts, so they're so delicious.
Fun.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was not like a specific moment, but like I just really liked like the candy. It was like kept coming up in just like these weird little places, and it was just like a fun little like, oh, we're in the middle of these deadly trials, but we're still teenagers who just want to eat candy,
right?
So the part that made me angry or want to throw something, obviously, was that fucking reveal at the end, because I didn't even have a clue.
No,
not one single clue. I thought maybe it was going to be Mala Suerte, or maybe Lumbre or Luna, who was behind it. I knew somebody was screwing with it. But Zeo? My jaw was on the floor.
So does that... Okay, sometimes twists that you don't see coming are great that you didn't see him coming. Because when you look back, it's like, oh my God, everything was laid out and I just missed it because I was being misdirected. And sometimes it's like, I didn't see that coming because it doesn't make any fucking sense.
No, there are hints because they do talk about how Zeo, they don't know what his powers are, and none of the powers of his father have manifested in him yet.
Okay.
There's a couple other things where, like, after the reveal that Teo is, like, in his mind, he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, that's...
I should have seen this.
Good, good, good.
And I'm like, oh, my fuck. I just thought it was because he was only 13. He's young. He ain't got his powers yet. It's okay. Anyway, no.
I'm going to be 33 and I don't have my powers yet.
Yeah, where the fuck are mine? Where the fuck are my powers? Anyway, I cannot wait to read book two. I'm very excited.
Sick.
I will be reporting back again.
Okay.
My favorite character was Nia. She is strong and confident in a way that I wish I could be strong and confident now, let alone when I was 17.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
17-year-old me needed this book. She's fiercely loyal to her friends. She always knows what to say to Teo. I love that she never lets her and Teo's like difference in where they're at in social hierarchies come in between them. Like, it is never an issue. There's never even like a little spat about it. Like, it is never an issue. They are just friends. Nia loves Teo and Teo loves Nia, and that's the end of it. So get yourself a friend like Nia. I think you'll be set for life if you get yourself a friend like Nia.
I'm trying.
Yeah. Wait a second. Am I not your friend? Like, no,
are you? I think that's a you. No, see, you know,
I'm not confident enough to be her, so it's not gonna happen. Anyway, I really enjoyed the book overall. I felt like it had a good balance of an exciting, like, young adult adventure. But also, like, taking the themes of the book seriously. There was multiple really good conversations about identity throughout the book. And I feel like they're just important things for teens to read. So.
And also, like, experiencing how other cultures view gender stuff.
Yes.
In a way that is just wildly different than, like, WASPy, you know, Eurocentric cultures do.
I really appreciate it. And I really appreciated, like, even though the world is like, it's queer normative, so there's no, it's not weird. Like, they literally have, if you decide you're trans, you have like a party thrown for you, almost like a quinceañera, but like,
I love it.
It's like, so like, but they, the author still found a way to like show Teo's inner struggle of identity, like, even though everyone is accepting of him, there's still that, like, with his wings, like, okay, like, these don't match what I, these are on the outside of me, but they don't match what I feel on the inside. I will say, I do wish that there had been a little bit more buildup of his wings, like, changing. It's not really like, you know, it's going to happen because on the cover of the book, he's on the cover and he's got like the green, like the bright green and turquoise wings. But I wish there had been a little bit more of just like, oh, the first time he used his wings, that they, like, I wish there had been a little bit like learning how to use them and be okay with them, and then, but, you know, whatever, small gripe. This book really gave me, I don't know if you ever read the Percy Jackson books.
I was not allowed to read the Percy Jackson books. I grew up in one of those houses.
Like, it gave me the same feeling as when I was reading Percy Jackson. And like, these books get compared to Percy Jackson a lot. And I feel like the similarities are really just between like the pantheons.
Sure. And, like, that's why I wasn't, that's why I wasn't allowed to read it.
but it's like, definitely like if Percy Jackson got a little bit more grown up. So it's like, you read Percy Jackson in middle school, then you get to high school and you read this.
Okay.
Type of thing.
I wouldn't have been allowed to read this.
Really either, like, I really like modern world infused with like mythology.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the only other gripe I had was there were some times where the dialogue and like what the teenagers were saying felt like an adult trying to sound like a teenager.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
And I understand that. It's hard.
My favorite thing is, like, in some of, like, Stephen King's newest books, he's, like, trying to write child characters, but they're using, like, 50s slang, and their names are, like, George, and it's, like, buddy. Buddy, just, maybe you can...
Maybe put
the, you've written maybe. So many books. Maybe
just stop.
Just, maybe it's time to retire. That feels like blasphemy to say, almost, but, like...
I don't know, I'm not a fan of Stephen King, I'm so sorry.
You know what? He was my first favorite author, and I still had such a dear place in my heart for a lot of his books, but like, he's not unproblematic.
I know what happens at the end of it, so,
and that's not even like all of the problems. I'm still working on that. I'm still sorting that out in my little emotion box.
Yeah, I mean, at least your favorite author is not J.K. Rowling, so.
No.
I mean, you probably weren't allowed to read those either. If you weren't allowed to read
I wasn't allowed until when I was in, like, fifth grade, we had to take like reading placement test where they like told us what our reading level yeah. was. And then we had to take these, read a book and take a test like once a month yeah. or something.
AR or whatever.
Accelerated reader.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know if Pennsylvania and Indiana had the
Indiana
same.
Indiana did. Until through middle school, I okay. think they had it. Well,
anyway, you could only read within a certain window around your reading level. Mm-hmm. There was nothing in my elementary school library that was fiction that I was allowed to read that wasn't lower than my tested reading level, except the Harry Potter books.
Dang.
So my mom was like, fuck, all right. I guess we're reading the Harry Potter books.
I only had to do AR for 1 year because Illinois didn't have it. And so I moved here in eighth grade. And so I only had to do it for a year, but I tested into like, it was literally, I think the highest level is like a 13.
Yes.
And I tested at like a 12.8.
Yeah. No, it was
I could literally read whatever I wanted. It was great.
Well, so the way it worked is you could read above your reading level. You weren't allowed to read below your reading level and get credit for it. That's how it was in Pennsylvania.
It was like a range. I think I was allowed to, I think it was like anything from like a normal eighth grade level, what they would consider mm-hmm. or above.
That, no, you know, it was wherever you tested was the floor. So I was in fifth grade.
But like, I think there were people, one of my friends tested at a 13. So you're only allowed to read like the highest level books. Like there's nothing there.
No, seriously. Like when I was in middle school, I had to fucking like suffer through fucking Huckleberry Finn, which I fucking hated. But there was like nothing. There was nothing for me.
That's stupid. What a great way to discourage people from reading. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
This book, I gave it a 4 out of 5.
Okay. I quattro out of cinco.
Yes.
So sorry. I'm very tired.
I'm really excited to read book two. I have book two. I got book two for being part of like a reader, like a advanced readers program or whatever. And I was like, oh, well, they're giving me book two for free.
Yeah.
I guess I should go get book one. So that's why I even read this. But I read Aidan Thomas's first book, Cemetery Boys. And I really loved that one. And the sequel for that one comes out this year. I think it comes out in like October because they're kind of like ghost spooky. Mm-hmm. So it's like very Halloween vibes. So that one comes out in October. I think I'm going to reread Cemetery Boys and then reread Cemetery Boys' Espiritu together and then do a back-to-back episode.
Sounds hot. I love
it. Anyway.
I love it.
Yeah. Go like our Instagram page at Page and Pixel PC.
Please. Drop us a line if you have any questions or thoughts or comments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comment on our posts and I will try to reply to you. We'll see. Anyway, read hard.
Play hard.
And eat candy.